the clerk call the roll?
Eric?
Here.
Kurt?
Here.
Mark?
Excused.
Nancy?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Jay?
Here.
Cindy?
Here.
Thank you.
And now it is time for the voluntary Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
And the first order of business today is a Board of Adjustment hearing. And this is Bill Minish appeal of the Planning Commission's August 23rd, 2016 denial of a conditional use permit to allow a two-family dwelling in an industrial district at 710 South Nordic Drive. And we have a process that we will be following, and I will read that process as soon as it pulls up on my iPad. Try that one more time. There we go. So the process to be used for a hearing on an appeal of a Planning Commission decision to the Board of Adjustment, which is our body right here. The hearing will be recorded. The hearing will be conducted in public session. However, there will be no public testimony taken. The appellant, the department director, and the owner of the property affected by the Planning Commission decision will be the only parties allowed to present argument. The parties may be represented by counsel. Argument will be limited to the legal and factual grounds for appeal as raised by the parties, as are limited to the matters described in Section I below. The appeal shall be decided upon the factual record created before the Planning Commission unless the board allows the factual record to be supplemented with reasonable provision granted for the other parties to the appeal to respond to any supplemental information. So that will require a motion to allow that information if Bill wishes to include some. Those presenting argument may be asked questions by the members of the Board of Adjustment only. The order of presentation is set out below. The appellant will present the grounds for appeal of the Planning Commission decision. The department director will present her report and recommendations, and the appellant will be allowed time for a responsive argument. The chair shall establish reasonable time limits for the parties to present argument. After argument has been completed, the board shall close the argument portion of the hearing and will proceed with motion matters and deliberations to decide the appeal. The decision must be rendered within 10 days after the hearing. The appellant shall bear the burden of proof that the decision appealed was made in error. Per Section 19.92.020B, the board may grant an appeal only if the appellant establishes the Planning Commission made an error in the application of pertinent laws. That's the first situation. The second is the appellant establishes the decision is not supported by adequate written findings, or the findings fail to inform of the basis upon which the decision appealed from was made. Three, the appellant establishes the Planning Commission failed to follow procedures, or four, the appellant establishes there was misrepresentation of a fact. In making its decision, the board may reverse or affirm wholly or partly the decision, may modify the decision, and may make any order, requirement, decision, or determination which it determines appropriate under the pertinent law. The board's formal action to grant or deny the appeal shall be subsequently formalized in writing and mailed to the appellant and affected landowner. So we will start out by hearing Bill's response to the Planning Commission's decision. Are you there, Bill?
I am, but you're very weak. Is there a chance of moving the microphone or something, or can you hear me okay?
We can hear you.
Okay, I can barely hear on your end, so I don't know if I can hear the other members of the... Okay, if you can hear me, this is in response to your first point on denying my permit. You state the subject parcel and surrounding area are zoned industrial and actively in use of industrial area. Dwellings, especially rentals or vacation rentals, are incompatible with industrial uses and not in keeping with current or intended future use of the area. How's everybody doing? Can you hear me?
Clearly.
I actually can't hear him clearly.
Oh, sorry.
I think he's reading off of his appeal.
And that's what I was going to read along. Side.
All right. His letter.
Oh. Not clear anymore.
Hang on, Bill. You're kind of going in and out. Try again, please.
Okay. How about now?
Yes.
Better.
Okay. I'll continue with the letter. In the immediate area of my parcel, industrial zones run on both sides of the road going back a block. They run south from Surf Street to the end of Piston and Rudder. On the water side, the industrial zones go from the south harbor to just past the cemetery. There are beach homes, upper street homes, homes with apartments, B&Bs, and retail space throughout this industrial zone. You say these dwellings, especially rentals or vacation rentals, are incompatible with industrial uses, yet they are throughout this whole area of town. Currently, all of these places are amongst commercial fishing or commercial industrial businesses such as Cold Storage, the Dry Down Dock, Petro Marine, Recon Enterprises, Piston and Rudder, the Coast Guard, Ponca, and the Ferry Terminal. There are more non-industrial buildings in this zone than industrial. Is it a perfect world? Maybe not. But this mixed use has been here a long time. Noise as a factor was brought up at the P&Z meeting and its impact on a residence. I'm familiar with the surrounding industrial area and that it can be noisy at times. I'm building with the noise factor in mind, using added insulation and using all triple clean windows. When the cold storage was built, extra insulation was put in to cut the noise. All of the industrial businesses, though open year-round, have busy times and slow times. It's not noisy all the time. The permit I applied for does fit in with current uses, as I have mentioned above. There are two B&Bs just down from my property on the water, a homeless apartment across the street, plus others in the area as well. These areas are sought after by visitors as people enjoy seeing the boats and beautiful mountains from where they are staying. While commercial fishing will remain the dominant use and focus of waterfront facilities, the master plan recommends that important secondary uses such as recreational fishing, outdoor excursions, and waterfront access be integral to overall borough waterfront planning. Changing zoning policies to be more strategic about the use of waterfront land for water-dependent uses, focusing on commercial fishing, but also including tourism and high-value residential uses. That's all in your waterfront master plan. The executive summary objective addresses strategies for providing new services and facilities for waterfront activities such as recreation, tourism, private commercial operations. Again, it seems to me a B&B or apartment is a use that falls within these objectives. Visitors coming to Petersburg are looking for waterfront B&Bs and apartments in these secondary uses of industrial zoning. There's a need and demand for these services. That's pretty much the first announcement. In response to your second point of denying this permit, you state, industrial property, especially waterfront industrial, is in limited supply in our community. The intended use should be preserved. 710 South Nordic was for sale for 458 days before I became the owner. So it's out there a long time. As far as intended use, looking at the waterfront master plan, and if you look beyond primary to secondary uses, my permit application falls in that perfectly. The said property, the waterfront, has limitations on use as waterfront. Unless you were to get rid of the airplane float, my property has no way to be accessed by larger boats. One, you would need to dredge, as it is tidal. Expanding harbor floats in that area is not likely. As far as moving the airplane float, I don't think that will happen either. There's around a 20 to 25 foot of open water around the end of the airplane dock that gives us access into the area. Industrial waterfront zoning is not just about primary users, but the other smaller secondary users as well. I think secondary is overshadowed by primary because low impact, low profile, etc. Commercial fishing, the main economic force in this town. As a commercial fisherman myself, I support that. But tourism now has a bright future in this economy of beautiful as well. With all the points I am making to this question, the failure to approve my permit, I need to add one more point in that the process did not address. When I first planned the building, I did not have the B&B apartment included in the drawing. Joe Burton always brought it to my attention, and at that point, I wanted to put one in, I applied for the permit. Construction had started, but was by no means close to being done. The permit was submitted April 19, 2016. It took until August 24, 2016, 4 months, for a quorum to meet to review my permit application. Early on, when I first applied, I was told by the inspector it should be not a problem to have the permit doing it. I did not intentionally try to circumnavigate planning and zoning, but did my best to comply. Most of the planning meeting was about this issue, and there was very little discussion on how it fit in the area and Radisson's master plan. I was unable to attend the meeting due to other obligations, and if I had been there to answer and ask questions, I think it could have made a difference on the outcome. Thank you for your time on this matter. I think that after reading and discussing the appeal points I have made about my permit application, including the many similar uses in the area, you will agree that my permit does fit in the Radisson master plan. Sincerely, Ben West.
We're still there. So the directions that I have in front of me say that there are two conditions by which we can consider your appeal, and that is if there's a report or some information that wasn't completed. Go ahead, Debbie. Please
Sorry,
do correct me if I'm wrong.
That's for the additional evidence.
Okay. Mm. So at this point, then, the department director...
Unless Mr. Minish has more to say.
And do you, Bill?
Well, according to your the order of this, I think the Department of Justice, won't you present a report now?
Yes.
If you don't have any other additional information, that's correct.
Well, at this time, I would like to hear your report, and then after that, I think I have time to respond to the report.
Correct.
Okay.
Unless I have three letters that I would like to read, but I thought I would read those after you give me the report.
We would need a motion from the board to allow that to happen. So if someone on the assembly wishes to, and now the Board of Appeal, to make a motion to allow those letters to be heard, then we can consider them.
Make a motion to hear those letters.
I second it.
It's been moved by Member Castro and seconded by Member Lynn that we allow Mr. Minish to read the additional letters on this issue. All those in, will the clerk call the roll?
Certainly.
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes. And that's unanimous. So Bill, do please go ahead.
So you want me to read the letter? Okay. The first one is from Waterfront Bed and Breakfast. This is and her husband. Okay. Dear Planning and Zoning Commission, I am writing in regards to the letter that was sent to Bill Minister at 710 South Native Drive, Petersburg, Alaska. Being the owner and operator of the Waterfront Bed and Breakfast that sits in a waterfront industrial zone, I found it hard to believe that his request was denied. For the past 19 years, we have operated in this industrial zone, along with the State of Alaska Ferry, the old bottle shop on the left, Hughesville Shipwrights on the right. Our building and yard provide a beautiful spot in the industrial area. Our guests never complain. Always are excited about what they see going on around them in our harbors. Moving down the street towards town, there's another beautiful bed and breakfast sitting in the waterfront industrial area, looking out at the harbors and boat dock. When we originally purchased our building, we were told by the city building inspector that we had to realize that putting the bed and breakfast in an industrial area meant we as owners could not complain about the noise. We have coexisted within the waterfront industrial area with no problems. I see no problem with another bed and breakfast or guest apartment on the waterfront industrial area. This improves the area where a number of our independent travelers walk and look at the harbors. Tourism may seem trivial to some, but the independent traveler loves coming to Petersburg and seeing our town. I hope that you'll take another look at Bill Manish's request for an additional auxiliary apartment or bed and breakfast. Sincerely, Sammy Parker. And the next letter is from, how are you doing? Can you hear me okay?
Yes, go right ahead.
Okay. And this is from Stacy and Jerry Dahl, to whom it may concern regarding the City of Petersburg's denial of Bill Manish's continued use permit at 710 South Native Drive. We would like the Petersburg Planning and Zoning Commission to know that use as proposed by Bill Manish is acceptable to us as owners of two waterfront lots adjacent to the subject parcel and three lots, including our residence across the street. These parcels, while situated on the water and zoned industrial, are not readily accessible from the water and are in direct view of two homes on the left-hand side of the road and an existing bed and breakfast to the south. While industrial zoning allows use for many different ventures, the current buildings are well-maintained and not displeasing to the surrounding residents, visiting tourists, or general passers-by. The use of the term industrial denotes work and productivity. But this stretch of property had the best mountain harbor view in Petersburg and are well suited for use as multifamily, vacation rentals, and or tourism accommodation. As owners of the two adjacent parcels, we see these to be the most fitting uses. Busy traffic, limited parking, DOT transit and construction boundaries in effect around the floatplane dock, and lack of accessibility from the water due to glacial upheaving of the mud flats actually make these parcels incompatible for industrial waterfront purposes. We are actually curious as to the city's intended future use of this area, as stated in this letter to Bill Manish. They are currently out of town for medical reasons, so are unable to attend the discussion. Sincerely, Jerry and Stacy Dahl. And then the third letter is from Anchor Properties and from Bennett McGrath, to whom it may concern. I've been discussing the issue of obtaining a conditional use permit by Mr. Manish on his property located at 710 South North, and would like to add my professional opinion of value on the matter. I have read over the thoughtful and well-written letter from Ms. McGrath to Mr. Manish, dated August 24, 2016. On this issue, I have a few issues with the letter. One, the code that was cited in the second paragraph of the letter is in reference to SFR dwelling slash property. The subject property is zoned industrial. The permitted uses under an industrially zoned property encompass Mr. Manish's intended use of this property. It is my understanding Mr. Manish is only intends on a one-bedroom apartment and caretaker dwelling in addition to his residence upstairs. When reading the code, I feel it would be reasonable to assume such a use could be permitted under 19.44.040. One would think that Mr. Manish's intended use of his property would easily fall under any of the four listed exceptions to the industrial zoning. While industrial properties are in fact limited and in short supply in our town, Mr. Manish has greatly enhanced the overall appeal and value of the area by building what he has on his property. Originally, there was a very dilapidated garage that sat on very little ground off Native Drive. Mr. Manish, after seeking and obtaining approval to do so, has greatly improved the subject parcel, thereby adding to the community's industrial look and increasing the value of the area properties. Additionally, kudos down to the south of a bed and breakfast that has over three bedrooms for rent and is similarly zoned. As a realtor and somebody who keeps abreast of area properties and market analysis, I feel that Mr. Manish's use of 710 South Nordic should be allowed and permitted to be what he has applied for due to the increase in value of his work to the property as well as supporting businesses use nearby. It is my opinion that what Mr. Manish intends to do with his industrial zone property will not further decrease or limit one's ability to operate on an industrial zone property in the future. Of course, I'm not a building official, nor do I lend myself as being such. I am simply tendering my professional opinion of value on the matter. Sincerely, Bennett McGrath, Deputy Owner of Tanker Property. So those are the three letters. Thank you for hearing us.
All right. Thank you very much. And now we'll move on to the department director, and she'll present her report and recommendations.
Yeah, do you want to do that?
Oh, do you think? It should come across with the mics, so okay. Maybe not.
Bill, can you hear me?
Guess not.
We're trying to make sure you can hear, Bill.
Okay.
Yeah. How's this, Bill? You hear okay?
Yeah, you're fine. Thanks.
Okay. Liz Cabrera for Department of Community and Economic Development. And our recommendation is that you affirm the Planning Commission's decision because we believe it does not meet any of the criteria established for granting an appeal. It's unclear which of the criteria the appellant is actually addressing in his appeal, but based on the information he provided, we think he's addressing the first criteria, which is the appellant is trying to establish there was an error in the application of pertinent law. The appellant claims that the commission erred in finding that the requested conditional use is incompatible with existing current uses because there are other residential dwellings in the industrial zone. We find that in its deliberation, the Planning Commission noted that there are existing residential dwellings in the industrial district, and these are allowed as a permitted use under the code as caretaker and watchman dwellings, and that's under Petersburg Municipal Code 19.44020L. The applicant has also been granted a building permit to construct a caretaker dwelling under the same provisions of this code. The commission is also tasked with allowing a use where the use will be in keeping with the uses generally authorized for the zone in which it is to take place. In its findings, the commission notes that the subject property is adjacent to a well-developed industrial facilities such as the commercial drive-down dock, bulkhead, and the cold storage, which operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The commission determined that residential uses are not compatible with ongoing active industrial uses. During deliberation, the commission provided examples where industrial operations in Petersburg have been curtailed due to noise or other impacts on nearby residences. The appellant further claims that the commission erred in finding that the requested conditional use was inconsistent with the future use of the area, specifically the waterfront master plan, and because a B&B or apartment falls under the objective of providing waterfront tourism and recreation. In terms of compatibility with future use, the Planning Commission notes the future land use for this parcel as Waterfront A. Waterfront A is defined as water-dependent commercial or industrial and is designated for specific uses prioritized for water-dependent commercial or industrial uses. Other uses may be allowed, but ideally only as interim uses. Example would be a short-term lease. As the appellant states, the borough's waterfront master plan speaks to changing zoning policies to be more strategic about the use of waterfront land for water-dependent uses and focusing on commercial fishing, but also including tourism and high-value residential uses. While maximizing the value of waterfront lands is a key recommendation, it does not mean that all uses would be encouraged simultaneously on all waterfront lands. In implementing this direction through the general land use map, areas located on the water and currently zoned industrial were selected for waterfront A land use. These are lands that are either on the water and or adjacent to existing infrastructure that are important to a working waterfront and maintaining a working waterfront. Areas that are not currently zoned as industrial were placed in the waterfront B category, which is a mixed-use area. So these are areas that are near the waterfront or on the waterfront, where waterfront is a key to the value, and this includes residential, lodging, restaurants, retail. So they take advantage of the waterfront value, but they're not necessarily dependent on waterfront. So in effect, the desired future condition is to respond to public concern raised during the comprehensive plan process to ensure there is sufficient industrial waterfront land for current and future needs of industry and commercial uses that are water dependent, and at the same time to allow a greater variety of uses on all the other waterfront lands to maximize the value of those lands. And just to address, we didn't have the letters that Mr. Manish read before the Planning Commission when we considered the application, but I know in Mr. Dahl's letter he talks about how it's not really appropriate. The area is not cited for water dependent because it's the tidelands are right there, so it's not really suitable for that. But those lots are adjacent to the drive down, which is a direct tie to waterfront. And I think that's what lends them to be relevant for industrial uses. So a lot of our places, like if you look at, for instance, Wecon Enterprises, well, they're not on the water, but they're connected to the dock there. So there's actually a tie to the water adjacent to that property. There's infrastructure in place, industrial infrastructure in place that ties the lot to the waterfront. Further, the appellant contends that the Planning Commission erred in finding that the industrial property is in limited supply in our community. The appellant did not provide factual information to the Planning Commission regarding the number of days the property was for sale prior to its purchase. So this information was not included in the record, and the Assembly would need to supplement the record to include it. However, the fact that the property was for sale for a particular length of time does not mean there is an ample supply of industrial waterfront land. It simply means there's a limited pool of buyers at this time for this type of property. And lastly, the appellant contends the Planning Commission may have denied his application because they believed he was attempting to circumvent the planning and zoning regulations. The matter of where the applicant was in his construction was discussed at the meeting, but it was not a substantive fact and was not included in the findings of fact or the letter of determination. About all we have, unless there's any questions.
Liz, so in that final statement right there for D is where a matter of where the applicant was in his construction was not a substantive fact. Why wasn't it, if after 4 months of time that he'd been building it, why wasn't that considered in the ruling by planning and zoning?
Well, he's okay to build. I mean, it's not a problem to build. You know, he has a building permit. He can go forward. He can build a caretaker dwelling. He can build a warehouse. So he already had the permit to move forward. the conditional use aspect of it is how he wants to create a second dwelling inside that building. So it's the use issue, not necessarily the construction of the building. Does that make sense? Yeah. And I would just say, I don't think we thought that he was trying to circumvent the process, because he never would have applied for a permit if he was trying to really circumvent the process. That wasn't really what the discussion was about.
So, Liz, just to clarify, he still is proposing using part of the building for storage.
That's my understanding.
Okay.
Liz, at the time Mr. Minish applied for that on April 21st, he has on the application for an apartment upstairs and for a 600-square-foot, I think is what is in there, domain or place downstairs. At that point, when we issued the permit, or when the permit was issued, why was there a notice given a conditional permit was needed?
Why?
Was there notice?
It's written on his building permit application. So when Joe gave him the permit, it says on the permit, the caretaker dwelling, the upstairs is fine, but the second dwelling will need a conditional use permit. And that's what Mr. Minish signed when he picked up his building permit.
Thank you.
Is that all, Liz?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions? All right.
Oh, I do have.
Sorry. Go ahead, Nancy.
Can he apply for a second? Try this a second time?
No, I don't.
It'll be the same findings.
Okay. Thank you.
Can't speak to what they would decide.
We're moving you back to the other mic. So, Bill, you have an opportunity at this time to respond to the points that Liz made.
I did not hear them. It's so weak that I can't hear them, so maybe you could repeat it.
You couldn't hear Liz?
You were not able to hear Liz Guerrera?
I heard Liz.
Those are the points that you would need to respond to.
But the other, I thought you were talking about the other.
You didn't get to hear the questions asked.
And that we're asking you, you were not able to hear the questions that were asked?
Well, I didn't hear the questions that the other board members asked.
Okay.
Want to go on?
Yeah, however we want to work this, if you could come close to that mic, I think that would make it easier. Eric's going to repeat his question.
Bill, this is Eric Castro. I had just asked Liz Cabrera whether or not or why the fact that the stage of your construction wasn't not considered a substantive fact and wasn't including in the letter of determination.
Say that one more time, please.
Bill.
You can turn the mic towards you.
I was wondering, I asked Liz why the state of construction was not a substantive fact, being as that it had been in construction for 4 months.
It took 4 months to have a quorum for a meeting.
And then
by the planning and zoning, is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
Yes.
And then Bob also asked a question. And he'll get closer to the phone so you can hear.
Yeah. Bill, Bob Lynn. My question to Liz is that on your original application, you had both the apartment that was upstairs and the B&B or the 600 square foot of space downstairs in that application. My question to Liz was, did they notify you or did they at the time of your permit that you would need a conditional permit for the part downstairs? And the answer to her was, yes, it was the conditional permit was noticed on your application, or when you got the permit, I mean.
Yeah, and either I must not have read it right, because I don't recall that on the permit. So I was building, and this was just kind of getting going. You know, Bill was there, and when he realized there was going to be a downstairs 16-foot apartment Airbnb, he said, "Whoa, you have to have a permit for this." Or I should say, I need to file for a permit. And so I did that immediately, but I mean, I didn't intentionally do this without having the proper permit. I've spent a lot of time going through the process of getting old permits, the Army Corps, all the other permits. So this, I'll call it an oversight by me, but it was not an intentional one. I had no, you know, I definitely didn't want to, I'm not trying to be sneaky or anything. This is, I'll call it an oversight. But as soon as I was notified that there was a problem, I applied for the permit, and yes, it did take 4 months to get a quorum to come up with their denial.
Bill, I think the point was that it was brought to your attention that you needed a conditional use permit that was added to your permit, and you did apply for that. I think that's all Bob was trying to establish.
The 19th of April, that was submitted.
Okay. And then Nancy also had a question about whether or not you would be able to apply once again for a conditional use permit. And
you would have to tell me that.
And Liz said she thought that you could, it might result in the same determination by planning and zoning.
Or a different one.
Yeah. So at if there's no other information to respond to the arguments.
Madam Mayor?
Yes.
Kurt Walguda here calling.
Sure.
Hey, the heartburn I'm having right now at this point is that Jerry Herbranson built that dentist office B&B with the intent of renting skips, which I don't believe he ever intended on doing. I know plenty of people that have built up these caretaker warehouses with never any intentions of taking care of a warehouse, always with the intentions of doing something differently. Now all of a sudden we're shifting gears on a very limited piece of property that only has access to the drive-down dock, and we're saying that this fellow can't move forward with an enterprise that's going to bring money into this community, seeing how we're so concerned about raising funds. And so my heartburn is, what are we going to do with these people that have already circumvented the system, who don't have warehouses in which to caretake, and who, under false pretenses, and we can even go one further down to the house on the very corner that was going to be a jewelry shop at one point that has never been opened as a jewelry shop. And, of course, it's not being used as a B&B either, but it is a home that they occupy once in a while. So when I was on the Harbor Board, that was a real bone of contention that we had. And I think maybe what we really need to relook at here is what size of piece of property would be considered usable for industrial zone where it could have access to waterfront. I think we need to put some limitations on water depth, the amount of beachfront access.
Can I interrupt for a second, Kurt?
Sure.
We need to close out the time for a responsive argument first, and then we can get into our deliberations. So I want to give...
I just wanted to bring that point up that he's not... You know, I mean, he's following on top of shoulders of other people that have deceived the city and have gotten what they wanted. So, anyway, I'll stand by.
Your points are good points, and they should be raised, but let's finish this portion, and then we'll move on to the board deliberation part.
Okay.
And I want to make sure that Bill has had every opportunity to respond to the points that were raised.
Let's see. on when they had the hearing or the when the planning and zoning met, I think it was on August 23rd, Olivia Olson actually submitted a letter supporting my B&B / apartment, and also the Harbor Department had no objections, and there was no mention of that anywhere. So I wanted to bring that up, and then what else? It seems like in the also in that meeting, there was a lot of time spent on, or I should say, there was very little time. There was only one sentence that came out that I heard in the audio from the, listening to the audio several times, that we did talk about other existing B&Bs. Apartments with homes in the area. It's more about, well, this is industrial. There's the cold storage. So I think I want to mention that again. And then you talk about waterfront A, waterfront B. It's waterfront A, all of that property, all those B&Bs and houses all along there, they're all in waterfront A. But you're telling me my prop doesn't have to be on the water, and it should be waterfront B. I mean, so I disagree with that. I mean, there's no reason that I can't have a waterfront B&B, and it shouldn't be when there's room for it. You look at the cold storage, for instance. Is that really water dependent? I mean, it's sitting there. All the fish coming to that, those, that could be sitting anywhere because there's nothing that comes over a dock to that fish in that immediate area. It all gets trucked there. So, and also the coastal cold storage downtown, it's landlocked. It, you know, they bring their fish in by vehicles, Northern Lights. So, you know, as far as having this defined to where it's so water dependent, that's kind of vague to me. So there's just some things to think about that I'm faced with. So I won't ramble on and on, but that's kind of what I disagree on the on that finding. So anyway, if you consider this enough, I'll hand it back over to you.
All right. Thank you. So this concludes the time for the parties to present their arguments. It is now time for us to deliberate on the appeal, and we have 10 days in which to do so if we wish to take that long. What's the pleasure of the board? Is there any further discussion amongst ourselves? And, Kurt, did you have any additional that you wanted to add?
Well, I was wondering, are we going to try to make that determination today, or will we have a later special meeting in which we can discuss this either privately or in public?
What's the pleasure of the board? My personal feeling is Mr. Manish has had to wait for planning and zoning. If we can resolve this, I would like to have it resolved today.
I agree with that.
Yes.
Well, if you guys feel like you have all the information, and I don't have any problem with that, but if you never did get a chance to listen to the audio, the planning and zoning meeting,
we have to go by the information that was presented today. So that's where that stands. So was there some additional that you wanted to offer, Kurt? I know I cut you off.
No, it's just that's been a real that's been something that we've been going around and around with on trying to determine what is allowable and what's not allowable. And like I say, there has been multiple places that have slid under the radar, under the guise of caretaker shacks and, you know, have gotten away with it. And so at what point, you know, do we draw the line in the sand and say, you know, everybody else was able to get away with this and now this person is not going to be able to get away with this? Maybe we need to go back to the planning and zoning and let them define maybe a little more specifically what it is and what it would actually take to have a usable piece of property, you know, considered marine industrial. So, I mean, that's always been something that we've debated back and forth for like 12 years when I've been on the Harbor Board, and we've never really come to a clear conclusion. So it just seems unfair at this point that you could have B&Bs on both sides of this man's property, and they get away with it, and he wouldn't be able to get away with it. So that's just my personal feeling. So if you guys all choose to vote in favor of the planning and zoning and the I'm going to be voting in favor of giving him a special use permit, even if it's maybe just a five-year permit until we can resolve this issue.
Any other discussion?
I still have a couple questions. Going back to Kurt's point, Liz, when we put the current plan into effect, current comprehensive plan into effect, did that change the conditions from the old plan, or is it the same? That'd be my first question. The zoning of that area and the criteria under that zoning, did it change?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
So the comprehensive plan is just a guide, and generally I am trying, it doesn't change the zoning ordinance, and so what's in place now is what's been in place since the 1985, I believe. I include information on the comprehensive plan in the findings for the Planning Commission so that they know that, you know, this is the direction that we're trying to head. So I generally include, you know, in the land use plan, this is, you know, the designation for this piece of property. So they have a sense of, yeah, this is where we're heading. You know, are we still being consistent with the way, the general direction that we want to go? But it doesn't affect the conditional use, what's allowed under, you know, permitted uses, the caretaker dwelling, and it doesn't affect what's allowed under conditional use and any of the criteria or anything else that the Planning Commission uses to make those determinations.
And the second part of that question is that the other businesses down there, they have, when they built, and that's going way back in history, and I agree with Kurt, is that there's multiple uses in there. Were those permitted, or did those just occur?
Some of them are pre-zoning, so some of the residences are pre-zoning. Some of them, I believe, are caretaker dwellings. You know, we don't have a definition of what a caretaker dwelling is in the code. So if someone comes and says, I want to build a caretaker dwelling on this industrial property, we have no way of saying, well, that's not really a caretaker dwelling because it doesn't meet this criteria. We don't have any criteria. So we basically have to say, okay, it's a caretaker dwelling. So when you see houses being built in the industrial zone, it's a permitted use as a caretaker dwelling. And then once you have a residence, a B&B can evolve because there's a definition of what a rooming house is, and that's defined as three or more rooms being rented out. So if you're renting out three boarders, right? So if it's three or less boarders, then you can have a B&B in your residence, and that's not going to fall into the criteria or get you to the level of needing any kind of permit for that. So I'm not sure if I've almost forgotten your question now, but but it's a combination of non-conforming uses and basically the caretaker dwellings that are not defined, which has kind of led to that patchwork of uses in that area.
Any other comments or questions by the board? Nancy.
I'm not clear about the caretaker dwelling. The apartment upstairs is a caretaker dwelling, and someone's going to live there?
Yes.
And caretake the warehouse. Is someone in that caretaker dwelling all the time?
Don't get into any of that.
Because maybe the caretaker dwelling needs a caretaker from time to time. Would that make any difference?
Okay. There's no standard as to what a caretaker dwelling is or how often it has to be used as a caretaker dwelling or what size it can be or even what it's caretaking. So you don't nearly necessarily have to demonstrate that it's caretaking anything because there's no definition of it.
Liz? Kurt mentioned something about a five-year conditional use permit. Is there such a thing as a short-term permit available, or is this a...
The Planning Commission, when it issues conditional use permits, the permit goes with the property. So it really doesn't matter who owns the property. The permit runs with the land. It's worth checking with the attorney. The Planning Commission has done things with home occupations where it's said we're going to review. This permit's going to sunset in a couple of years, and at that point we'll review. Or in some cases, they have said, we'll just review this in a couple of years to see how it's going. I would add that in this case, I don't think the Planning Commission is thinking that Mr. Manish, per se, is going to have a problem. You know, it doesn't usually happen, or a conflict doesn't usually occur because he already knows what he's buying into. I think what we're looking at is the long term, and this is what one of the concerns of the Harbor Board was that got raised during the deliberation is, you know, when you're two or three owners down the road and then you start adding another industrial use, well, this person just paid X amount of dollars, you know, to buy, let's say they paid $1 million to buy Bill's B&B, and now we're going to allow, you know, a fiberglass manufacturing shop next to it. And I think you don't do any favors to the industrial business and you're not doing any favors to the B&B by creating this inherent conflict. And for the Planning Commission, sort of being on the front lines of seeing those conflicts, and a lot of the conflicts were based on decisions that were made 20 and 30 years ago and now are coming to the head. And so that's sort of what they bring to the conversation and kind of their experience and they're bringing forward. And I think that's what, when the Harbor Board says, you know, we're concerned because there's 24/7 operations going on near this parcel. That's what the Harbor Department was referring to, is that we're concerned because this is an industrial area. And I feel like I'd be remiss in not saying something about the cold storage. Mr. Minish brought up that the cold storage added sound dampening walls and things, but the cold storage didn't add those by choice. The cold storage was directed by the then city council to do that because of the complaints of all the neighbors for the operation. So, you know, X number of dollars that they spent doing that wasn't done because we thought it was a good idea. It was because we were basically directed to do that.
But to be fair, those residences were there before the cold storage was instead of the other way around.
Right, and to be fair, the cold storage is in an industrial zone.
I agree. So I just want to play devil's advocate here so we flesh out the argument, because I do.
Yeah, and I think you're right. That's the point, though. I think if we're bringing new uses into that industrial area and you have already established residential mm-hmm. uses, I think it's more likely to cause a problem. Whereas I think with Mr. Manish, you know, he already knows what the area is. I don't necessarily think that he's going to have a problem with it because
right.
he's moving into the area already the way it is. It's when you bring change in, and I think that's what the commission has experienced too, is when you sort of bring change, that's when some people get a little bit more concerned about what's happening.
But as I look at the code, a multifamily dwelling is actually a permitted conditional use.
Conditional use, yep. Yeah, a single family is too.
Mm-hmm.
Liz, I think I should ask you, do you think Mr. Manish raises a good point that the cold storage is not a water-dependent industry?
I think if they had been given the choice, the cold storage would have been on the water. So I think the fact that it's not on the water is a detriment to the use of the cold storage, not a positive. So when they cited it, they weren't given the option for waterfront. That's what they wanted. But then they got pushed out of the waterfront area and put on the roadside. So.
Okay.
Does planning and zoning see this as kind of kind of drawing a line in the sand. As I said, Mr. Minish's request for this permit, do you think this is just a straw that broke the camel's back, being as that there's already been accepted uses ongoing for the past dozens of years? And like you said, this is we're looking toward the future, being as that the waterfront master plan was just really that the planning and zoning hasn't changed in over the course of these decades. Is this just the are we just trying to because you were talking you spoke about trying to
and I'm going to interrupt you. Yes. Because we need to keep our argument to the facts that are presented. Okay. And you're asking for an opinion, so okay. I'd rather stick with the information that we
thank you.
Have and clarifications of thank of you. Information that we've been given.
Okay.
I looking at the four criteria we're given to take a look at here, the first one is the appellant establishes the Planning Commission made an error in the application of pertinent laws. From my perspective, I don't see Mr. Minish making that case at all. So I would have to say that in that particular item that I'm not, I would have to go along with the planning and zoning. The second item, the appellant establishes the decision is not supported by adequate written findings or the findings fail to inform us of the basis upon which the decision appeal was made. Again, I don't see where a case was made that I can see that criteria. Now, maybe some of the other board would argue with me, and I'd like to hear the arguments. The third item, the appellant establishes the Planning Commission failed to follow procedure. In all the information I read, I don't see where they had not failed to follow procedure, although I do have a problem with the fact it took so many months to meet on it, but that's a different issue. The fourth one, though, the appellant established there was misrepresentation of fact, and that goes to the heart, I think, of the argument that we talk about the other uses that are already permitted there. And that, and I think, is the crux of the argument. And I'd like to hear where the other board comes out on that information.
Nancy.
When I was reading this last night, I couldn't see where any of these four applied. The only thing that could possibly be questioned is the length of time it took to respond to his application. But I don't see that any of these are grounds for an appeal.
Member Lynn, could you expand on what you mean by citing number four, please?
That goes back to the discussion we have of the other uses out there right now, the other B&Bs that are there right along that industrial front, you know, and there's multiple businesses, multiple B&Bs and residences in there. They're already there. Then the question is what difference does this one, although it goes back to Eric's question, is it a line in the sand that we don't want to permit anymore? That's yes. The question.
Understood. Thank you.
Do we know how long it has been zoned industrial?
Probably since the 80s.
So we don't know if any of those residences or B&Bs were there before it was zoned industrial.
I don't know if this would help support any of the argument at all, and I hope I can stay on task here. But I do know of a couple of B&Bs that were built under the guise of going to be fishing related that were built after 1980s.
Sammy Parker's B&B, she said in her letter, was that she's been operating for 19 years.
Okay.
In short, I think you raise a really valid point, Member Lynn, using number four, given the historical context of it. I'm inclined to grant the appeal based on that.
If I may, what is the fact that's being misrepresented by P&Z? that the Assembly might want to clarify that very clearly, because if that's the basis, what facts did P&Z misrepresent when they made their decision? I think that, am I reading that properly, Liz? That's what that means.
And I guess the thing that I'm wrestling with.
Did P&Z basically say something that was not true or mislead anyone?
And to weigh in on that, what I'm wrestling with is looking at the document that the Planning Commission minutes. They talk about the use of the building changing. He has changed the number of dwellings that are in that unit, but it still is described as a place that is going to be storage, and the footprint of the building isn't going to change. So I'm trying to figure out where that tipping point is. And to me, that would be the place where potentially the Planning and Zoning Commission misrepresented that the use fundamentally was changing because he was adding one dwelling to that building, but he has not removed the desire to have storage in that building.
Agreed.
So I would need, yes.
The commission's, sure. I'll tell you what the code says and why. So if I understand what you're saying, he doesn't change the footprint of the building. He doesn't change any of the things that he's doing in the building, except he's adding the second dwelling.
Mm-hmm.
So under permitted uses under the code, we've already talked about the caretaker dwelling is allowed. So that's the upstairs. The storage is allowed, obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, you can have a garage, you can have storage, whatever. So where it goes into requiring the permit and where it passes that threshold is when you add that second dwelling.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not that the Planning Commission is erring and saying you didn't change the size, so then you don't have to have the permit. What the Planning Commission is saying is you've changed the use from a caretaker dwelling to a two-family dwelling. And so then it crosses from the permitted use, the caretaker dwelling, to the conditional use, requiring the conditional use permit into the two-family dwelling. So I guess I'm either not understanding what you're saying as far as what misrepresentation of the fact is. It's pretty black and white to us.
Well, what I'm saying is what you stated is correct, but that conditional use is permittable in that area.
Only with the conditional use permit.
Correct.
Yeah.
But my understanding is he did, in fact, apply for the conditional use permit.
Yeah. I guess I'm
and under the conditional use permit, it says the commission shall consider the suitability of the property, the character of the surrounding property, and the economic and aesthetic effects of the proposed use upon the property and neighboring property. The use will be permitted if it is in harmony with the general purpose and intent of this file, and where the use will be in keeping with the uses generally authorized for the zone in which the use is to take place. So right there in your 19.72.020, I mean, this what I'm trying to do with this conditional use permit, it all falls, it does it right there.
And Bill, I appreciate that, he was just reading from municipal code, but this portion of the meeting is board deliberation only.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
So is there any further discussion, or do we have a motion to appeal, deny or approve the appeal? Or to defer to a later time? Sure, Steve, go ahead.
But just so that the Assembly knows, regardless, if you choose to overrule the P&Z's decision, you probably need to say which of those four
we're addressing
and go into detail on that.
Okay.
So that's included in the note.
Okay. Go ahead.
I was hoping you'd give me more time to say.
I'll go ahead.
So do we want to take a 5-minute break?
Yes.
keep doing. Liz, Deb, you may know the answer to this. If the assembly chooses to overrule P&Z and they pick one of those four areas and they outline those, is that something that we have to have the attorney review before it's actually final? Right. See, that's what I was saying, is that I'm not taking shots at the assembly, but I don't want to put you guys in a bad spot either, that if you go that direction and it's not upheld, in other words, the attorney looks at it and says, well, I'm sorry, that doesn't fall into that category, then we're, I don't know where that leaves us.
Well, I think the thing to consider is, are we setting a precedent?
Again, just, I'm not trying to lead the assembly one way or the other, but if you chose one of those four reasons as the reason to overturn P&Z, it may be one of those that it's subject, we have to subject it to the borough attorney to look at it for her to say, yeah, that meets that criteria, or no, it doesn't. I just don't know.
I think the code allows Bill to pursue that further in a legal fashion if he wishes to. I don't think that we have to have the legal review.
No, I'm actually saying, does the borough attorney end up having to overrule you guys?
I don't think the code says that. I was just reading that.
I think a compelling argument could be made for number one also, given the criteria for applying for a conditional use permit, that the commission did err given the historical context and what Mr. Minish wants to do with this and the channels he'd followed, that an error was in the, that they erred in the application of the pertinent laws and being in harmony with the existing infrastructure down there. Perhaps I'm wrong, but I see it that way as well. I think one is applicable.
My hang-up comes back to the same place I think that Kurt was, is that we have those uses now. They're already occurring down there. And even though the code may say that you can't, you know, not to do it from here on out, not to allow that second apartment, we've already, in my mind, established that precedent. The uses that are currently permitted there. So why, what's wrong with what Mr. Minish is proposing versus what's already there? But that's where my mind is at. And maybe another side to that is that we go back to P&Z and we ask them to take a look at the question. I don't know. I'm thinking out loud here.
So we're given these 10 days. Is there an ability to be able to reach out to P&Z and have them deliberate on this by an answer to Mr. Lynn's question?
I think at this point we're considering the information that's presented in front of us and making a decision.
Madam Mayor, may I make a motion?
You sure may.
May I make a motion that we permit Bill to or allow him to have a conditional use permit to do what he'd like to do on that piece of property until we can send this back to the planning and zoning and have them give us a much more clearer definition of what will be allowed in the future.
So if we're, as Steve said, if we're overriding the Planning and Zoning Commission's decision, we need to choose the condition that they did not meet and provide a little meat on the bones so that people understand our logic trail.
That would be the condition number four that Mr. Lind has brought to our attention.
And what would be the misrepresentation?
That it's already been allowed before.
Is there a second? Hearing none. Okay, Steve, go ahead.
I'm not an attorney. I do not believe that the assembly has given any details yet that qualify as a misrepresentation of fact. Okay. Again, I'm not an attorney. I don't know how, if that's what the assembly chooses to do it, I'd highly recommend taking your 10 days and using that to maybe vet that decision through
the borough attorney.
Again, I'm not. Mm-hmm. I could be totally wrong, but I don't believe that's a misrepresentation of fact.
Mr. Manager. All right, how about for number one then? How far outside the box is I reaching?
Oh, man. Wow.
In my mind, I see that one, but I'm also not an attorney.
Possibly. I think Bill mentioned some parts of the code there mm-hmm. that
correct.
Referenced. I did not attend the P&Z meeting where this was discussed.
Sorry to put you on the spot.
Can't. No, it's okay. Yeah. It's okay. I can't. I just don't know. Yeah. And that would be, Liz might be able to better speak to that since she was at the meetings. That would be, did they miss, did they apply the law? I think they did. But is there a lot of vagueness in our existing zoning? Yo, you bet.
That's my
point.
And the
question is being vague, is that an error? Because it specifically says made an error. That's, eyes of the beholder kind of thing, meaning.
Point taken.
You could say it's an error, they could say it's not, and you could both be right. That might be, again, back to where the attorney has to weigh in.
And the part of the code that we're talking about is the 19.72 that talks to conditional uses for that situation.
Procedural question. If we were to take the 10 days, then this we would have to come back into formal session then before, and you have to have, we'd meet the same criteria, that you'd have to have four or more people here present.
Correct.
All right, I'll try another motion, and I'll move that we take the 10 days and that we reconvene and after we've had a chance to look at this in more detail.
Second. It's been moved by Bob Lynn and seconded by Nancy Strand that we take up to 10 days to consider this appeal of the appeal, or no, the appeal. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, will the clerk call the roll?
Jay?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Cindy?
No.
Eric?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
And the motion passes 5-1. So did you hear that, Bill?
I did, yes.
Okay. So we will be getting back to you.
The conditional use permit passed 5-1.
No. But that was a very positive spin on the discussion. We'll be getting back to you within 10 days, and we'll be having an additional discussion on this and closing out our decision on your appeal.
Okay. Thank you very much for taking the time to look through this.
And thank you for bearing with us over the telephone. All right.
Cindy, this is Kurt here calling back. Hey, on Friday when we canvassed the elections, is there an opportunity at that point? Or does this have to be a public discussion?
Yes, Steve.
What I was going to suggest is that if Debbie and Mindy can pull together some kind of the transcripts of what occurred here today, we will get that to Sarah. She knows these four rules, and basically we'll see.
She can give us an opinion.
Where the things that the assembly has brought up are those? Do they fit into one of these categories in a way that would allow the assembly to go that direction?
All right.
We'd love to have it done by Friday, so that would be an option for not having to do another special meeting, but Debbie's buried and has an election to run tomorrow, so everybody
yes.
can vote.
So Kurt's question was, could we, or Was that your question?
Of course,
could roll this into the canvas meeting.
That would be excellent.
And if we
Agreed.
Could get something from the attorney, would that be possible?
Do my best. We will do our best. Yes, I would try to do it during the canvas meeting. That makes sense.
All right.
Cool.
So at this juncture, I am going to call for a 5-minute break.
We're going to try and do it at the same time
we're canvassing the election so that we don't have to call the meeting, which that was a good call.
I don't need it.
One meeting. On the one hand, I don't have very many appeals.
You know.